It is a doomsday that is foretold in the Mayan calendar, the Chinese oracle of the I Ching, even an internet-based prophetic software program. 2012
is here, much to the terror of some of the world's doomsayers. It's the year that the ancient Mayans are said to have predicted the end of the world. Not so, say scholars of the Mayan civilization, who lived and live today in Mexico and Central America. Among those scholars is John Hoops, an associate professor of archaeology at the University of Kansas. Hoops is an expert in pre-Columbian civilizations and has helped debunk the 2012 myth. But along the way, he's become fascinated with it and has gone from studying the myths of ancient Latin America to the myths of the modern-day United States. Sylvia caught up with Professor Hoops over the phone.
How did you first get interested in pre-Columbian civilizations?
I was a very avid fantasy and science fiction fan when I was in elementary school and junior high. Fantasy led me into science fiction, and then it was reading that stuff that led me into things like Chariots of the Gods and Carlos Castaneda and a lot of the other speculative literature of the early 70s.
That's interesting, because that's some of the stories about the Maya that are not so factual maybe spun out.
Well, that's exactly right. I think the Maya have always fascinated those people who were interested in science and interested in discovery, but also who had very vivid imaginations that they exercised quite freely.
Maybe we can take a step back and you can tell us a little bit about the Mayan civilization.
Well, it's a fascinating culture that has roots that go back well over 3,000 years. It's a complex story that begins with the very origins of social complexity in Mexico, a part of the world that we call Mesoamerica, and comes all the way up to the present day. In fact, there's 6 million living Maya alive today, and I think it's fair to say that Maya civilization is thriving.
And the Maya are known for having been very advanced mathematicians and astronomers for the age in which they lived.
That's true, but I don't think that they were any more obsessed with math and the stars than were, for example, the ancient Greeks, who had a very highly advanced astronomy and astrology as well.
So is that part of the myth that we've sort of come to associate the Maya with being particularly connected to math and the stars?
Well, the sad story is that I think it's an example of cognitive dissonance. No one is surprised that the ancient Greeks, who were basically white people of the Mediterranean, were technologically advanced. It's a different story when people are asked to accept that people who didn't look like them, who had darker skin and who came from the Americas and were an indigenous people, actually had mathematics and astronomy and philosophy. So, ironically, I think racism plays a part in why people seem to be surprised that the indigenous peoples of Mexico were so, quote-unquote, advanced, when they don't feel the same way about the Greeks.
The 2012 idea comes from the calendar. So I wonder if you can just explain how the Mayan calendar works.
Well, the Mayan calendar, unlike our calendar, is mostly based on a count of days as opposed to a count of years. And so the concept of year 2012 is really one that doesn't work in the Maya calendar very well. The Mayas were focused specifically on large cycles of time, or increasingly larger cycles of time. The smallest unit was a day, which was called a quin. They also thought in terms of cycles of 20 days, of 360 days, of 7,200 days, of 144,000 days, and then we get into the sort of controversial area as to whether there were even larger cycles of 13 of those 144,000-day cycles to make up a big cycle, what was known as a great cycle, that would have had 1,872,000 days. But they kept track of these counts of days with these different units.
And that great cycle would be how many years?
That great cycle would be a little bit less than 5,126 years.
And that's the cycle that supposedly would end on December 21st, 2012.
That's correct. Either that or December 23rd. And I think it's fair to say that scholars are still disagreeing as to which correlation is correct, whether it would be the 21st or the 23rd.
And how did people come to believe that that meant that the Mayan believed that the world would end on that day, the end of, I guess, one of the great cycles?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because it's something that, that doesn't come up really until the mid-20th century, when you get a combination of the thinking pertaining to a document called the Dresden Codex, which is an ancient Maya book, and the interpretations of the Maya calendar. And long before there was any speculation about the date 2012 itself, although the calendar had actually been worked out, a scholar named Ernst Firstmann, a German scholar, had come to the conclusion that the Dresden Codex, on its very last page, had a depiction of a flood that represented the destruction of the world. But he never wrote about 2012. It wasn't until that interpretation becomes combined with Joseph Goodman's theory that there were these 13 Bakhtun cycles, the 5,125-point-something-day cycles, that the two kind of come together into this myth.
Is it the 13th one that's supposed to then end on that day, and they associated with those images of the Armageddon?
Well, it's not so much images of Armageddon. The images in the Dresden Codex show what's basically a giant snake with water pouring out of its mouth. What happens is that when Michael Coe combines these two concepts in his book, The Maya, which is published in 1966, he becomes the first person to link the notion of the end of the 13th Bakhtun with the concept of Armageddon.
And now, what do many academics think?
I don't think there are any academics who feel that the Maya indicated in any way that the end of the 13th Bakhtun would represent destruction. I think that that sort of got hooked into the mythology, and there's very little support for it at all. In fact, there's really only one monument that refers to what will happen on that day, and it doesn't say anything about destruction at all.
And some believe that that actually was a Western idea.
Well, that's right. That's part of my own thinking as well, is that there was a tremendous preoccupation with the end of the world right at the time that the civilizations of the Americas were being discovered. In fact, Christopher Columbus, of all people, was compiling something that he called the Libro de las Profecías, or the Book of Prophecies, around 1500, 1502, during his fourth voyage to the New World, which was when he actually first came in contact with people who were themselves in contact with the Mayas. And in his Libro de Profecías, he compiled references that came from ancient literature and from the Bible in support of what he felt was a prediction that the discovery of these most distant lands would bring about the sequence of events that were described in the Book of Revelation, and that his discovery of the New World would actually bring about the Second Coming and the events that were described at the end of the Bible. In the early years of contact, it became melded together into an eschatological syncretism in which Western ideas about the end of the world were overlaid on what were said to have been indigenous ideas.
As an archaeologist yourself, I would think that you might be highly annoyed at the propagation of this idea.
Well, annoyed, I'm annoyed at it the same way I'm annoyed by ancient aliens, in that it propagates what I see as a contemporary mythology about the ancient past, which ignores scholarship. It ignores the enormous hard work of scholars and graduate students and people who write dissertations and people who do archaeological field work and people who work very hard on academic books and attempting to figure all of this out in favor of what's essentially a very simplistic explanation that really doesn't explain very much at all.
But at the same time, it seems like you've also become interested in how, as a mythology, this 2012 phenomenon has come about.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's because I'm very interested in sort of the use of narratives about the past in the present, which I see as being something that's common to all religions, which tend to start with creation stories. And I see it as a really interesting phenomenon in contemporary society that may very well result in the creation of some new religious traditions. One of the phrases I like to use is the invention of sacred tradition, which comes from religious studies scholars James Lewis and Olaf Hammer, who put together a book with that title. But the invention of sacred tradition refers to this process of sort of creating mythologies to explain the past for the purpose of communicating a contemporary ethical and moral position.
And what is the 2012 story that you most frequently hear now?
The one that is most frequently propagated, actually there are two varieties. The one that I see most frequently is this end-of-the-world notion, which can be traced to, what's the best way to describe it, a lot of very avid commercialism on the part of book publishers and cable stations and programs like the History Channel, very much like the way they're promoting Ancient Aliens. It's something that enters into popular culture. Of course, Roland Emmerich's movie 2012 is the clearest expression of that. But I see that as far less interesting, to be perfectly honest, than the idea that 2012 might bring about a sort of new age transformation of consciousness, a new way of thinking about the world, a revolution in human thought and spirituality, which itself is kind of intriguing. I see it as being based in some of these other elements of contemporary mythology, but it is something that I think has much more juice in it as a philosophical issue.
Yeah, and that's where it's sort of related maybe to some of the other issues that we face today of the environment and war, maybe nuclear proliferation, all of that.
Well, that's exactly right. And ironically, interestingly, I think that Coe's use of the term Armageddon was one that he selected because back in the 60s, because of the Cold War, there was a lot of discussion about Armageddon. But back then, it was nuclear Armageddon. But the type of apocalyptic experiences that people are discussing now have much more to do with the environment and with global warming and with social revolutions and with a variety of things that are happening around the world, economically, politically, which, quite frankly, have always been happening in one way or another. But we're much more aware and cognizant of them now because of digital networks and new modes of communication.
This is Casey Currents. We're speaking with John Hoops of KU's Department of Anthropology about the 2012 phenomenon. Now, how did this idea end up spreading?
It actually has roots that go back to the 19th century in the work of people like Helena Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society in the 1870s, 1880s. But then they also resonate in the beat culture of the 1950s. In fact, William S. Burroughs and Allen Ginsberg both had intense interests in the Maya. Burroughs went to Mexico in order to study ancient Maya writing, and Allen Ginsberg spent several months at Palenque in Chiapas, where he wrote poetry and actually did some archaeological exploration. So interest in the Maya enters the consciousness of a subculture through the beats. It then becomes very popular in the context of what became the ancestral grounds of Silicon Valley in the 1960s in the context of counterculture at UC Berkeley and Stanford.
And these were people who were involved in the experimentation with psychedelic drugs and was part of sort of the hippie movement too, right?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, it was the Beats who sort of their hipness gave way to the hippies. And it was in the context of Northern California that people like Ken Kesey used LSD in the context of government-sponsored experiments. And this powerful psychedelic was also given to academics and scientists at Stanford University and at Berkeley. And interestingly, it was some of those same scientists who became early computer programmers.
Now, just taking a step back, what do you get from reviewing the origins of the 2012 myth? I wonder, what are you learning about us?
Well, what I'm seeing is an alternative history of the United States in one respect. I haven't seen as many histories of the counterculture as I would like to see. And I think that there are a lot of things that have influenced our music, our films, our books, our popular culture, that have deep roots in American history that go all the way back to the spiritual exploration of the founding fathers.
And what part, sort of more specifically, do you mean?
Well, for one, the tremendous variety of American religious experience, in particular, the esoteric and the occult dimensions, which are out of the mainstream, but that nonetheless represent a very strong current in art and in philosophy and in music.
And they went on to influence the countercultural movements of the 60s.
Yes, that's right. They many of them had important influences on what's now known as the New Age movement, which is really an alternative spirituality. I think a phrase that's fairly common these days is to hear from people that they are spiritual but not religious. And when you look into what that means, often it will mean that they embrace alternative values that may come from Eastern religions, such as Buddhism or Hinduism, or they may come from Native American traditions, or they may come from other areas. Well, those ideas were introduced to American culture by this milieu of the late 19th century.
And where do you see this sort of new form of spirituality heading?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think a lot of it has to do with digital technology, and a lot of it has to do with the speed and rapidity with which we know things and think about them. And actually, waxing philosophical, I think that a better term than a transformation of consciousness would be a transformation of conscience. And what I mean by a transformation of conscience is how we think morally and ethically about the things that are happening in the world, which we now have far more access to than we ever did before.
Is that how you hope people will see or read this idea of this change or entering a new age in 2012?
Well, my feeling is that we're not really entering into a new age. I think our culture is constantly changing. Every single day is a new age or a new dawning. There are watershed times, but I'm skeptical that there will be any sort of foretold change in 2012. It is guaranteed to be a fascinating year. We have the Olympics. We have a presidential election. And so someone will come out in 2013 saying, oh, yes, I said this was going to happen, and it happened. And they will be able to spin that into whatever mythologies continue past that. But as I mentioned, I see it as a potentially significant religious phenomenon. And I like to point to things such as the Mormon Church or Scientology as examples of kind of American-born religions, which are pretty significant these days. And I would not be at all surprised if 2012 sparks some new religious movements.
John Hoops is an anthropology professor at KU. He has a blog on the website of Psychology Today and recently wrote a post called What You Should Know About 2012. Find a link to it on our website at kcur.org. After the break, rural towns in Missouri are finding a new way to address the shortage of doctors. This is Casey Currents.